Accession number 27268, Mr. Dennis Reed, Reel 6. Now, we're talking about your time on the Royal Sovereign. Now, in a way, we've been looking at some of the routine aspects, you know, of life. Let's go back into what actually happened. Now, you joined her at Greenock. And what happened when you first joined her? I mean, what was she doing? Where were you going? You know, the ship going, obviously.
What was she doing? Well, I mean...
Was it a new commission?
Not being... she was what?
Was it being newly recommissioned?
Oh, no.
So you were joining an established crew?
She was on active service. And I joined a replacement. I replaced a man, I'll put it that way. And we were laying at anchor under the fourth bridge. That's where she was laying.
I thought you said it was at Greenock.
No, wait a minute. That's where we used to tie up. That's where we used to anchor under the fourth bridge.
So you moved to Rosyth?
Yeah, well, I mean, when I joined, I mean, now, goodness knows, I can't remember this, but when I joined it, I think it was a matter of days or something. I mean, we were underway, you know, I mean, to join the convoys.
So what happened?
When we joined the convoys?
Yeah, was that the first thing you were on, convoy duty?
Well, I mean, all I know, all I can tell you is that at that time, I mean, I was a passenger aboard that ship or a member of the crew. I mean, where she went, I hadn't a clue. We were on the convoys, so I would assume, yes, we joined the convoys, the North Atlantic convoys.
Now, what was it like on the North Atlantic convoys for you?
It was very, very cold, very, very wet, and very hazardous.
In what way?
Well, you didn't know what to expect, the first thing. You could be amongst a U-boat pack. You relied upon the captain and his immediate below officers. You then picked the convoy up. I don't mean literally picked it up. I mean you then joined the convoy. But the expression was you picked it up. And then you escorted the convoy in company with your own... escort, destroyers and frigates. You then escorted the convoy to where it was going. Now, we used to do a triangle. And that would be Greenock, America, Nova Scotia, and then back to Scotland. But you didn't go right into Scotland, you didn't go right into Halifax, Nova Scotia, and you didn't go right into Yankee land. You more or less stayed about a day steaming from the land, and then you would pick an outward convoy going the other way. I don't know whether it was the fourth or the fifth convoy, I don't know. You then went towards Russia that way. You came down again. But I mean, if one is perfectly honest about it, I mean, you didn't have a clue where you were going. You just went. I mean, where the ship went, obviously you went. But I mean, you didn't know what you was doing or where you was going.
Did you have any problems in the with seasickness? I mean, you don't have a lot.
If I say about twice. Probably three times. Yeah. It didn't affect me, put it that way. The worst, you see, I think you mentioned earlier on about on watch. You see, the Royal Marines were, say, sentries aboard the ship.
So would you do sentry duty?
Well, when I said you could call them sentries, but they're watchkeepers, and that would be corporal of the gangway.
Well, let's go through them then. What did the corporal of the gangway do?
Well, do you want me to individualise all their various duties,
or
tell you what the watchkeepers were.
Whichever is easiest for you in most detail.
Well, like I was going to say, the watchkeepers consisted of corporal of the gangway, keyboard sentry, forecastle sentry, cell sentry. Now, there you had four basic watches. Now, corporal of the gangway, he didn't have to be a fully grown corporal, but by and large, they were a corporal, which, as you know, is two stripes. Now, his position was on the quarterdeck. He had a roving commission. In other words, he could walk all around the ship if he wanted to. He had a roving commission. It was his duty that nobody came off the boat and nobody came on the boat if it was in harbour. That was his job. He was responsible to the officer of the day and the general behaviour, I'll put it that way, of the Royal Marine Barracks. A very, very responsible job. The keyboard sentry, now he was known as a keyboard sentry. Now he had, I would say, the most responsible job on the ship. Because in the captain's lobby, that was right aft, where the captain had his quarters, you had the keyboard. Now, a keyboard was a big glass container, approximately the height from the deck to the deckhead, which would be, roughly speaking, what, 9-10 foot, and about 10-12 foot long, with two big glass doors. Now, on that board would be every key of the ship, every key. He had a log, and in that log, or a book, a log, would be every key was numbered, and what the key referred to, number one, number two, blah, blah, blah. Now, it was his responsibility, and I can speak now from experience now, it was his responsibility that if an officer come along, give me the key to the bomb room, your name, sir? And if he said Charlie Brown, or he would say Midshipman Brown or Lieutenant Brown, you would look down the log. Sorry, sir, not entitled. Now, you could say that to everybody, obviously not the captain. You could say that to any officer that came along and said, sorry, if his name wasn't on that log, not entitled. And I did have one or two arguments. But it was a very responsible job. Very, very seldom was it abused, because they knew, and that you used to wear a sidearm, and you was fully authorized in the event of any problem that you could use that sidearm, and no one did, but nevertheless. The other one, which nobody liked, was the cell sentry.
Now tell me about that.
Tell you about the cell sentry. Right up the front of the boat, commonly known as the bows, you had the cells. And they were right on the sharp end, like that. And you had four cells there. Now the cells, don't imagine they were spacious. What they were, the cells consisted of a means of sitting down as though you were going on the loo on the toilet with a massive iron door in front. They were the cells. Now the cell sentry, it was his job to be up there. Now, it doesn't require any imagination at all that the Royal Sovereign class, or known as the R-class battleships, they had a very, very bad habit, and they corkscrewed. Now, the definition of a corkscrew motion is you have a horizontal ship, and she had dipped the bows in at the same time as she had slewed the port. At the same time, she would more or less dig her backside in and then go to starboard. So you can imagine, you'd have to imagine, because I can't describe it on tape, but that is the way she liked that.
That's clear enough.
And now, if you're going to be seasick, you're seasick. But that was the worst post that you could be on. And when I say you're two on, four off, that's ours, of course. It wasn't so good. Plus the fact, if you're in the cells, I wasn't an inmate of the cells, quite honestly. But you was given the job of picking oakum. They used to give you a pound weight of rope, tarred, and you had to pick it. The object of that was, in the days of the sailing boats, you used to cork the decks. But also, you had the cable locker there, the cable being the anchor chain. Now, so if you was up hook or up anchor, you come through the on the forecastle, and then you had four marines would be standing. You had like a hole about 8 foot square, and the cable went in there, and on each corner was a rope, and a Royal Marine on either corner, four corners. And if you was bringing the anchor up, it would start coming in, and then one of them would throw his rope around the anchor. Throw it, and it's a habit you got into. When you threw it, you could catch the other end. Heaven forbid if you fell in there, well, it's too bad. Because, I mean, you've seen an anchor chain, no doubt. I mean, they weigh a few bob. And the idea was, when he'd done it and got the other end, he then pulled that and pulled the chain over, or the anchor chain over. And then at the same time, he let his rope go. The other bloke there is Oppo, he would have done the same. It's a system. So the chain didn't come down straight like that in one big heap. It came down and was spread over the four corners. Now, if you can combine that with being a sentry with all that noise. We've done the keyboard.
We haven't done forecastle.
The forecastle, that was a wandering commission he had. Or patrolled, if you like to call it. The upper deck up to the forecastle. He was only there, all right, to look pretty, if you know what I mean. He had no particular job. None whatsoever. And that was it. I mean, that was the watchkeepers. There were no guards as such. Another duty of the Royal Marines aboard the ship was the Sergeant Major's job. Every morning, he had to personally report to the captain, nobody else, the captain, and he would do the usual salute, good morning, sir, chronometers all wound and steady. Chronometers, you probably know, is a clock. And it was his Sergeant Major's job to see that, if I say all the clocks, I don't mean that literally, I mean there'd be hundreds, but the main ones, like on the bridge and you name it. That was his job. Nobody else's. That was old Percy Parker's job.
Now, how did you get on with, one thing is, how did you as a Marine get on with the rest of the crew, the sailors, the stokers? There's always a bit of joking about
well,
this.
Well, there's always a joke about it. I mean, I've used the expression since you've been here, a matlow. I mean, the Marines and the Stokers, they were buddies. I mean, you talk to any ex-Stoker, and he won't hear one bad word against a Marine. He may call him a load of scale, you know, a load of... it's very hard to say how far I can go with the language.
Oh, that doesn't matter at all. Just say you like.
But a Stoker would not insult, I don't mean that, not insult, but he would run down a bootneck or a Marine. But you run a Marine down, if you were ashore, and you run a Marine down in front of a Stoker, and woe betide you. The others, the other sailors, I would say, yes, you got on well with them. I never had any trouble whatsoever. None whatsoever.
Was there a jokey rivalry or competition with them?
Oh, crikey, yeah. I mean, you can never say, oh, yeah, you know, oh, yeah, bloody good bloke, that Matlow, you know, that seaman, good bloke, oh, yeah, fair enough. There were jokes, obviously, there were jokes, but no serious, and I'd never heard of one insult. One insult. I mean, you could talk with a sailor, and he'd say, you know, make enough noise with your boots. And incidentally, when I mentioned that word boots, you did wear sea service boots. In other words, they didn't have studs in. So, no, I mean, by and large, you had the jokes, you get a Matlow, you know, what the hell do you want, bootneck, you know, and things like that. Then you turn around to the Matlow and say, well, bloody good washer, do you good, you know, things like that. I mean, but I think I can honestly say there was never any malice, I'll put it that way.
It was just a joke, or jokey.
Yeah. Joking, yeah.
Now, what about your NCOs? You know, your corporals, before you got promoted, obviously.
Well, I mean,
how did you get with them?
As an NCO, I mean, what do you want me to say? We were very well liked, or...
No, I mean, before you were an NCO, how did you get on with yours?
What you got to appreciate is the Marines aboard a ship was known as a detachment. Where you lived was known as a barracks. So you were very close harmony. Obviously, there were some that you couldn't get on with, others that you went ashore with. By and large, I would say there was far better comradeship aboard a detachment as you would have in Chatham Barracks. The NCOs, like everything else, either your face fitted or it didn't. You was either liked, or it was a case, oh Christ, you here again. But basically they did rely on you, and they appreciated the fact that you was a corporal.
That's before you're a corporal, remember?
Well, before you got made up to corporal, I got on well with the NCOs, and the NCOs aboard the Sovereign. You had the Sergeant Major, Colour Sergeant Parker, you had Sergeant Gilbert, then there was a Scotch Sergeant, then you had Sergeant Fitzgerald. Now that's a memory for you, remembering those names. They were all sergeants, except Percy. He was a colour sergeant, but he was always known as the Sergeant Major.
And they were fair, strict but fair.
They were as fair as anything, yeah.
What about your officers?
The officers, you see, I can only talk of the officers I met aboard the ship. The officers aboard the ship, they were good. To a little extent, they formed part and parcel of the detachment. They never inserted their ranks. They expected you to do your work. And it was that. I mean, to give you an example, I mean, if I'm on the shelter deck of the boat, having a nice cigarette, and one of the officers went by, he would acknowledge you, either by saying, watch where you're putting that cigarette, or how are you, and things like that, you know, sociable, put it that way. I never had any trouble whatsoever with an officer aboard the ship.
Either Royal Marine or ordinary officer?
Royal Marines I'm talking of.
Did you have much to do with the other officers?
Well,
or was it, did they leave you to yourselves?
You see, when I was on duty as corporal of the gangway, you were in touch with various officers. The commander of the boat, officer of the watch, obviously, officer of the watch. But no, I got on well with the officers. I got on well with them. The only people I didn't get on well with was the ruddy midshipmen.
Now, why not with them? Or is this when you're, is this when you're a corporal? Because we're not out there up to that point yet. Because you were a year on board before you were a corporal.
Well, I can only remember clearly when I was a corporal. As a Marine, I mean, you were just a Marine. You done what you had to do. And then you had the midshipmen aboard there. They tried to insert their authority. You probably know the dress of a midshipman. He used to have white on his lapels, and they thought it was four-ring gold. They thought they were the captain, and what they were superseded their authority, I'll put it that way. And you stay clear of them. There were occasions when I had to remind them that you don't do this, sir. You had to call them sir. Various little things, you know.
Now, what were the Russian convoys like?
What were the Russian convoys
like?
Yeah,
you talked a bit about the North Atlantic. And did anything actually, I mean, from what you said, nothing actually happened on the North Atlantic convoys. You just went out and back. You weren't threatened by submarines or anything. Nothing actually happened.
Oh, well, who gave you that impression?
You did. That's what you said. You've got to tell us if you want us to know. Do you see what I mean? So tell us some of the things that happened.
Well, we never met any surface ships. There may have been over the horizon, which is 12 and a half miles away. We met submarines. Oh, good heavens, we met them all right. But then, you see, I mean, you don't really know what is happening. You don't know what's happening. I mean, you're just steaming along, and the rougher the weather, the better it was, because the U-boats couldn't operate in rough weather. But, we went through quite a few packs. But fortunately, we had no surface contact.
And did you lose many ships to the U-boats in the convoys you were escorting?
Well, now you're asking me an impossible question. Yes, we lost ships. How many? I have no idea how many whatsoever. Unfortunately, you don't keep a record of when you see a ship blown up. But I don't think anybody, an ordinary member of the crew, can truthfully say, yes, we lost X number of ships. I don't see it. Because bear in mind, I mean, all I know is that when you're in the middle of a U-boat pack, you had the order, or the convoy had the order, scatter. Then you had ships going left, right and centre. You don't know what happened to them until, say, the following day when they had the recall. The seamanship part of the boat didn't really apply to the Marines. Not really to that extent. No. So, no, I can't answer that question whatsoever. Really. Other than the fact that I know we was in close proximity of the U-boats. I do know that.
Yeah, many air attacks. Or that would be the Russian convoys more than the Atlantic, wouldn't it? I'm not quite sure.
I would say none to speak of, to be honest. Not that I can remember. Not like I remember.
Now, any incidents you remember from the first year or so, you know, that stick out in your mind as things that happened?
Yeah, I got married. No.
That was before you joined, I think.
Yeah, before I joined. No, when I joined.
I think it was before you joined the Royal Sovereign, wasn't it?
You should have come yesterday. It was our 64th anniversary. Yesterday. But, now, what do you actually mean? Is there anything that I can recall in particular? What do you got in mind? I mean, yes, I can recall one incident when I was a Marine.
Tell us that.
When I was keyboard sentry. But now you see, you may say I'm jumping the gun, because we are now in Philadelphia Navy Yard. You see.
Now, you've remembered a couple of things. You want to talk a bit about the convoys and what they were like.
Right, the convoys as such were basically boring. Secondly, they seemed to last forever. Having no idea where one was going was, to say the least, very disturbing. Weather-wise, I mean, no one can say they sailed in the Atlantic and really enjoyed it. I mean, you had waves there 20, 30 foot high. I mean, when the destroyers, the escort, I mean, they had orders to stay in their hammocks all day. And they were screws up. The expression being is, when they're going along with the waves, you used to see the propellers come out of the water. So obviously a U-boat couldn't operate in them, so you look forward to that. Wet, yes, it was wet. Cold, it was very, very cold. Very cold. But you see, as an ordinary member of the crew, you had no idea where we were going, how long we were going for, which way we were going. I know you can go by the sun, you're going west, so you're going towards America. Then all of a sudden you muck you up, the next thing you know it's the sun's behind you. So you're slewing around, zigzagging all the time.
Did you know what you do, what the Royal Sovereign was there to do? Because the Royal Sovereign's no good against submarines. Did you understand what you were there for?
The Royal Sovereign was no good against submarines. With all due respect, I would suggest that any commander of a U-boat would not agree with you, because the Royal Sovereign was quite capable of sending up depth charges.
They had depth charges?
Well, of course we did, yeah. And it was quite capable of, if you knew where the U-boat was, you could put some 6-inch shells, you could put some 4-inch shells quite near him. If he had the nerve to surface, you then had the Oricon and the pom-poms. So, we had a very, very active part in convoys against U-boats, the Royal Sovereign. You wouldn't use a 15-inch, obviously.
So you were firing sometimes with the...
We used the guns.
So your main role wasn't against German capital ships breaking out to attack the convoys then? Because that's what I thought the big ships were attached to convoys for.
We were there as an escort, protection. There was operating in the Atlantic German ships, I mean big ships. So if, for argument's sake, all of a sudden Bismarck appeared, or Tirpix appeared, you wouldn't expect a destroyer to act against one of them. That is what we were there for. Not that we would have stood much chance against the Tirpix, you see. But at least we had 8 15-inch guns that we could have said hello.
So your main role was against German capital ships, but you also were fully effective in the fight against the submarines, which is what you meant.
Exactly. Exactly.